night. So depressing. Oh, my. We come to the last case of the day, 12-17-14, and it's USA versus Dwayne Priestley. You can come up, Mr. Mondry. So it's still good morning.
May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors. For the record, my name is Steve Mondry, M-O-N-D-R-Y, and we represent the appellant Dwayne Priestley in this matter. The evidence was insufficient for the district court to find by preponderance of the evidence that Mr. Priestley violated the terms of his supervised release. Therefore, we're going to request that Your Honors reverse the court's finding. Specifically, there were two conditions of supervised release that were placed on Mr. Priestley. The first one was a special condition and one was a standard condition. I will address the standard condition first because that's how it was addressed in our brief. Defendant did not violate the standard condition of supervised release when he told the police officer he no longer worked for the business and the business was in his wife's name. There is no dispute that the ownership of the business was transferred to his wife's name, so the issue then becomes whether or not my client lied to the police officer or to the probation officer when he allegedly told her he no longer worked for the business. Our first position is the probation officer exceeded her authority by limiting my client's activity at the business. Clearly, that's the needs to be done with the discretion of the court, and the probation officer may not do so. In this particular case, you may recall my client was sentenced in May of 2009, and he was released from custody in October of 2010. From 2010 until approximately 2012, he had been reporting to another probation officer that had retired. Presumably, during the time of that reporting to that initial probation officer, there were no violations that were reported or recorded at all.
So there's no evidence that the first probation officer was aware that he was still working there.
No, I would submit, Judge, there's no evidence that the first probation officer felt it was a violation of the special condition to still continue to work at the tax preparation business. Clearly, he was reporting to that probation officer, and I would submit, had the probation officer had an issue with that, he would have somehow addressed it to the court, but that wasn't done so. The first time that he met with the second probation officer in February of 2012 is when she filed this violation, and the assumptions or in the violation were that he told her he still worked at the business and she told him you cannot work at the business, and that was the lie. It doesn't make sense in the context of how it happened that he would lie about that because he'd have no reason to lie. He felt he was under the impression, because no one had told him it was improper to do so, that he was able to do so. And I would submit that just her saying that isn't evidence of a lie as much as maybe some type of misunderstanding. However, it brings us to the special condition of bond, which is the contention that he did not violate the special condition of bond. The defense position is that my client did not directly or indirectly engage in the as a tax preparer, which is what he was instructed to do by the judge upon sentencing. At the revocation hearing, I think both parties agreed that there was no evidence my client directly acted as a tax preparer. The only issue whether is his actions caused him to indirectly act as a tax preparer. In the government's brief, they slightly skew the issue by raising or addressing the issue whether or not my client directly or indirectly engaged in the business of tax preparation. However, That issue is not before the court because the special condition of the supervised release was only that my client not act directly or indirectly as a tax preparer. And I would submit that the actions that he had conducted or done were more of an administrative nature and was not an indirect act as a tax preparer.
But what about the fact that he was answering questions for tax preparers? That would amount to indirectly participating in tax preparing.
That he did what, Your Honor?
He was answering questions for the tax preparers.
Judge, the question is what questions he was acting as the tax preparers. If it was dealing with administrative duties, I would submit that that's not indirectly acting as a tax preparer. If it's giving them information or telling them what to do on the tax preparer form, clearly that's an indication of a tax preparer, right, as acting as indirectly as a tax preparer. But we don't have that evidence in front of us, Judge. We have that there was a question. He asked questions. He appeased clients of the firm. And I think we have an opportunity here to sort of direct the district court judges to say, listen, you need to specifically state in your conditions of specialized supervised release exactly what you want. And had they done that, I think my client would not be in this position at all.
What was he doing there?
Judge, apparently he was there in it. May I just say this, Judge? He had a right to be there because the court did not say he did not have a right to be there. Secondly, the type of work that he was doing, I would submit, was more of administrative type work. He would install the taxware program. He would get drinks for people. He would sit there and do whatever he would do. But it's the fact that he had signed his name to payroll checks and that his from the wife's company, all things that if the judge did not want him to do, she could have very easily said, don't have anything to do with the tax preparation business and don't go there. I don't think it may not have been the smartest thing for him to be there, but it certainly doesn't tell him to give guidance of what he can do and can't do. And the confusion, I would submit, the fact is the first probation officer for over a year never said you were doing anything inappropriate.
Is he back in?
Yes, Judge, he is back in. He got a 9-month sentence, and for all sense and purposes, he'll be out next month. So it's really a question of not so much what would happen to him. It's just I think you could clarify to the district court what you would expect on their terms of supervised release. It certainly would have been very easy for Her Honor to say you're to have nothing to do with personal tax. You're to have nothing to do with the tax preparation business. She didn't say that. She just said, don't directly or indirectly prepare taxes.
That's pretty much the same thing.
Well, one is much broader. A broader is
more emphatic.
Yes, okay, more emphatic. The tax preparation business construes a lot of things. And had she said in the supervised release special condition, don't have anything to do with the tax preparation business, I would submit all the questions, or you're absolutely right, he shouldn't be there. It said don't have anything to do with business. She made it much more narrow, less emphatic, don't be a tax preparer, indirectly or directly. So he certainly didn't directly prepare taxes. The issue is whether his actions...
I think maybe getting coffee may even be indirect.
Then it's a question of how broad you want to go, but I would submit that she certainly could have clarified.
He had a learning curve that was not a flat line. He wouldn't have gone anywhere near the place.
I would agree with you. But he wasn't restricted from the terms of his supervised release, and that's what my contention is. I agree with you. As a practical matter, he shouldn't have. He should have stayed away.
Was it an effort made by the defendant to call the previous probation officer?
I was the attorney at the supervised release hearing, and we were unable to locate where he had retired from the probation office, and the supervisor was unable to give me specific information as to where he was. But I would submit that if there was a violation that had occurred, you would have heard about it prior to the second probation officer coming. For the reasons that I've stated, I would ask your honors to reverse the district court's finding. Thank you.
Mr. Mondry, thank you so much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, so Hello. How are you, Mr. Huckstrom?
I'm well, thank you, Judge Rovner. How are you?
I don't know. This has been a hard day. Go ahead.
May it please the Court. My name is Eric Hogstrom. I represent appellee of the United States in this appeal. The District Court did not abuse its discretion in revoking supervised release here. The District Court had ample basis to find two independent violations, specifically with respect to the what was termed violation number one, which was failing to truthfully to provide truthful information to the probation officer. What the defendant told the probation officer, according to the probation report, was not that he would not, from that point forward, work at the business, but that he no longer worked for the business and that he was, quote, self-employed as a bookkeeper. These facts are undisputedly untrue, and for that basis, that violation alone suffice to establish provide a basis for revocation.
Up to that point, though, was he telling the other probation officer that he was working at that tax preparer business?
There's nothing in the record that indicates that that's the case, Judge. All we have is defendant speculation that had the first probation officer found a violation, he would have reported it. We don't actually know whether the first probation officer was ever informed as to what the defendant was doing or not doing. All we know is that the defendant nominally changed the name of the ownership of the business to his wife, but the employees who were interviewed at the business informed the agents that, in fact, the wife had nothing to do with the business in daily practice, and the defendant maintained signatory authority over the bank account. For that reason, that alone, I submit, would constitute indirectly acting as a tax preparer, especially in light of the district court's specific statement during the original sentencing hearing when asked by the defense counsel at the sentencing hearing whether the defendant was allowed to own the business. The district court responded, no, he may not. I find that he has, and I'm paraphrasing, but I find that he has damaged his integrity to the point where I do not think he should be engaging.
Does that override the judgment form?
It does not, Your Honor. I think the judgment form should take precedence. I just submit that only as sort of gloss on what it is that the defendant could have understood, and it goes to a second point, which is that what the defendant did here was he went ahead and did what he wanted, and then when he got caught, he claimed that the condition was ambiguous. He could have challenged it on direct appeal, or he could have sought clarification if he felt that it was unfair.
Perhaps
when this,
if she had finished it up saying, and I really mean it, it would be
That's right, Judge Bauer.
Have you ever been in that courtroom? She really means it.
I can attest to that, Your Honor. So for all those reasons, the fact that there are two independently established violations, the government would respectfully ask that the court affirm the judgment.
Thank you so much. I have a minute. Yeah, you've got a minute, Mr. Mondry.
You know, I was in Her Honor's courtroom as well, and she did mean it, but she should have specified it in the report, and that's my whole position. And because of the ambiguity that is here, a person in my client's position isn't sure of what he can and cannot do. And reasonable people can differ, and we can interpret indirectly whatever it is, but she had the opportunity to say exactly what she meant, and the district court judges should say exactly what they mean. And that's our position for asking you to overturn her position. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mondry, you were court appointed.
Judge, and we are from time to time court appointed. In this one, we were referred from a private source.
They made a mistake. But, well, we thank you anyway.
All right, thank you.
Okay. I got you as, let me just make sure that I know. Yeah, we've got you as court appointed. Well,
now we know you're not going to submit a bill.
No. Okay. Thank you.
Listen, thanks to everyone. Case taken under advisement.
Thank
you. Be well. Go out and do good work. And this court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30. Bye-bye, everyone.